All right.
What do you got?
All right, I'm going to get to a Maryland, West Virginia recap here coming up. But there was a report yesterday or last evening that the Snyders, the headline, and it's from Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. With the sale of Commanders believed to be imminent, the Snyders have cleared out of the facility. And per multiple sources, Florio writes, Dan and Tanya Snyder have cleared out of the team's facility in advance of the sale of the team. As one source explained it, they left in late December. We're also told that within the building, the word being used is that the potential sale is, quote, imminent, closed quote. Multiple sources said that a sale could be approved and announced as soon as the upcoming league meetings in Arizona. This is, they've been clearing out for a while now. I don't know that for a lot of us this is, you know, major breaking news, but still it is another indication. And as I've mentioned about Florio, even though he gets a lot of stuff wrong, and by the way, what's interesting is to go through his timeline of stories about the Commanders, he did finally say the signing of Jacoby Brissett likely takes Commanders out of play for Lamar Jackson. No, not likely, definitely. And it was definitely even before Jacoby Brissett. And he was riding that one hard, the Lamar Jackson to Washington conversation. But I do think that a lot of the, you know, the latest signs point to perhaps a conclusion sooner rather than later. By the way, start thinking about how we're going to handle all of this. This will be the biggest sports story in this town in, you know, many, many years. Certainly since the Nats won the World Series and the Caps won the Stanley Cup. And in many ways, you can say it will impact more people in terms of the volume of people that will be not only interested, but very thrilled with the news. I've been thinking about this a lot, by the way, because we're going to have, you know, there will be a couple of days of looking back, looking forward, celebration, but I don't know about overdoing it. I think we got to act like we've been there before. These are people that are involved. But man, this will be one of the greatest days in the history of this town when it happens. By the way, Wes Schweitzer gone, signs with the Jets. Also, quarterback carousel continues. Marcus Mariota to Philadelphia on a one-year, $5 million deal with incentives that could pay him $8 million if he ends up playing, if Jalen Hurts were to get hurt again. And then Gardner Minshew to the Indianapolis Colts. So that happened. I've not seen the money on that yet, Denton. I don't know if you have at this point. I am interested to see what Minshew gets from Indianapolis. Minshew will obviously be there to back up whomever they draft, or to perhaps start until the rookie quarterback that they draft is ready to play. By the way, also the Eagles, they keep Darius Slay. It looked like a few days ago that he was leaving. 3 years, $42 million for Darius Slay. So he gets $14 million a year, $23 million of it guaranteed. So they've got Bradberry and Slay continuing as they're starting corners. And also, I did think it was interesting that Drew Lock, you know, was out there as a potential free agent. We didn't talk a lot about Drew Lock before Brissett was signed. And I mean, for me, the reason I didn't consider it is if you were to sign Drew Lock, Drew Lock's not coming here to mentor anybody. He's not coming here to be, you know, a great guy in the quarterback room. I'm not saying that he wouldn't be. But he's in his third or fourth season now. He wants to play. He wants to start. But he did re-sign in Seattle to continue to back up Geno Smith. Man, it has been a busy week in the NFL. And we've got more NFL coming up next hour. We will talk about yesterday's pressers for Jacoby Brissett, Taylor Heinicke in Atlanta, and Andrew Wiley, Washington's new offensive lineman from Kansas City, had something interesting to say about Eric Bieniemy. So we'll play all of that for you coming up next hour. Ben Standing will be with us at 8. But Once again, Pro Football Talk reporting more important than the Snyders have cleared out the facility is that they believe that the sale is, quote, imminent, at least according to people inside of that building. All right, let's get to my Maryland-West Virginia game take.
Kevin's take. The good, the bad, the ugly from yesterday's Washington football team game. Here's Kevin.
All right. Look at this blow by. There's the tuck. Jameer Reese delivers it. How good was Juju Reese down the stretch of that basketball game? He put his fist and stamp on the game, especially when their big guy fouled out. Once Bell fouled out and he was in foul trouble the whole way, great job by Dante to get him fouled out. It was all Juju Reese down the stretch. All right, look, if you missed this game yesterday, this really was a total fist fight from the opening tip. West Virginia came out. They bullied the Terps in the first 10 minutes of the game. They took a 13-point lead, 19-6. It was 13-4. The Terps had 4 points 10 minutes into the game. They went on a 7-minute scoring drought. Why? Because West Virginia took them out of everything that they wanted to run and kept turning Maryland over. I'll get to that on the list of things that I didn't like. But Maryland bounced back, you know, came off the ropes and started swinging wildly. And they took a 2-point lead at the break. Second half, it was literally like an all-out assault on one another. Big-time runs, physical basketball. Maryland goes up 7. West Virginia answers with 16 unanswered to go up 9. Then Maryland comes back. They take a 5-point lead, and then West Virginia cuts into that and had a running 3 at the buzzer to win the game, and it was just barely off. And that game ended, and both teams looked exhausted. 67-65 Maryland. The game lasted 2.5 hours. There were 43 fouls, 38 free throw attempts, 13 steals, 7 block shots. It's weird, these NCAA tournament games that are played that way, especially when they are the first game of the day, 11:15 a.m. Birmingham time, is you had a very sterile environment, which you see a lot of times in these, you know, these neutral site NCAA tournament, you know, games, especially early in the day on Thursday and Friday. But the game did not match what the crowd was. It was super intense start to finish. It was honestly the kind of game I love to watch. And it's one of the reasons that from afar, I've always enjoyed watching Huggins teams, because they turn every game they play into an absolute mess, but it's a beautiful mess to me. And Maryland answered. They answered consistently with their own brand of toughness and shot making, and it was really incredible to watch. The list of things that I liked. I'll start with Julian Juju Reese. He's the most improved player, not only on the team, I think you could say he's the most improved player in the Big Ten this year. This was a guy that we knew coming out of Baltimore had a ton of talent. And we saw it occasionally last year. And we saw it occasionally early in the season, but we saw many uglier moments from Reese earlier in the season as he tried to figure the game out. And Willard kept saying, look, this is for all intents and purposes after the wild year of last year, this is his freshman year. It's going to take time. Willard told me before the season, he said, this guy's going to be a double-double guy in the Big Ten. Mark my words. I mean, he is that good. And he's turned into that good. 37 minutes, stayed out of foul trouble, 17 points, 9 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, 6-9 from the floor. He's got to work on his free throw shooting. It is an ugly, flat stroke. He made 5 of 10, had 3 block shots in the game, had a bunch of turnovers early in the game, but he was a force down the stretch, especially, as I mentioned, when Jimmy Bell, their 6'10", 290-pound, you know, big man, fouled out, and he only played 11 minutes in the game. He was in foul trouble from the start. Look, Maryland had foul trouble as well. Jameer Young was on the bench for many minutes in the second half when he got his fourth, which was something that completely went over the head of the broadcast team of Nance, Raftery, and Hill. They didn't pick up that he was back into the game until 2 minutes after he was in the game. Julian Reese, to me, the star of the game. But Dante Scott, for me, was a close second. In the first half, when they were down and they were struggling, Dante got buckets. Dante settled them down. His defense was outstanding throughout. Their defense, by the way, on their star, West Virginia star, Eric Stevenson, was so good that Huggins benched him to start the second half. He finished 4-for-17, 9 points in the game, their star scoring player. By the way, Martinez did a phenomenal job on Stevenson. They helped. They bottled him up. It was the defense in the first half on the list of things that I liked that really kept Maryland in the game when they were down 13. It could have been a lot worse. Dante Scott continues to do things that not everybody recognizes when he isn't shooting the ball well, and he was 4-for-7 yesterday, had a couple of real good back-down post-up moves, and up and under, couple of jump hooks, ended up with 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals. Just one turnover, by the way. I thought Hakeem Hart was outstanding yesterday. It's funny, but there's and I would never have guessed this, and nobody's watched more of every game than me, probably, and a few of you out there. But there's basically a stat that says if Hart gets into double figures, the Terps win. He's a very important player, don't get me wrong. But I don't know, that seems to be as much sort of coincidence as anything else. But he had 15 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds. His length, his ability to guard almost any position, his ability to shoot the three and post. By the way, he's an excellent passer. So is Scott, by the way. He had 15. Don Carey got in foul trouble a little bit early on. He had a couple of big threes, though, that were really huge in the game. And Patrick Emelian for this team all year long has been a glue guy, an off-the-bench guy, a high IQ player. And he had a shot that he knocked down at the end of a shot clock as the clock was winding down. He didn't want to take it, but he took it anyway, knocked it down. And Ian Martinez didn't score yesterday, but his defense, especially on Stevenson in the first half, was outstanding. The Terps' overall fight in this game against a team that basically that is their MO. They're going to come out and turn every game they play into a fracas, into a total brawl. Maryland answered. 8 years ago in the second round in Columbus, they didn't answer. They got punked. They got bullied out of the tournament. Now, Melo Trimble got hurt in that game, and that was a big, big, you know, turning point. He was concussed and knocked out. I was surprised that there weren't more people knocked out in this game. West Virginia had one of their players, Matthews, knocked out on a screen. There were vicious screens in this game. Reese set some incredible screens. So did Scott. Really good job overall by the Terps. Excellent job by Kevin Willard too. Have to mention him on the things of on the list of things that I liked, because that team all year long has gotten into a bind early in games, especially away from home. And they're used to it. And Tracy Wolfson interviewed him at the end of the second TV timeout when they were down 13-4 and they hadn't scored at that point in like 6 minutes. And he said, look, we've been here before. We were, you know, this was what it was at Purdue and at Michigan State. And we've been here and I'm looking up at the scoreboard and we're only down 9. Feels like it should be worse. We feel pretty good about where we are. I've heard him say that before. This time, though, the way West Virginia came out and really, really physically dominated Maryland over the first 10 minutes, I was concerned. Denton, how concerned were you early?
When they went on an 8-minute scoreless drought, I was kind of worried. And then when they gave up a 16, I mean, they, Kevin, they have to be the first team to ever go scoreless for 8 minutes in one half, give up a 16-0 run in another half and still end up winning the game.
The 16-0 run we're going to get to in a moment because something sparked that really bothered me and a lot of Maryland fans. But overall, there's a lot to like from that win. And getting a win over that team, that's just a better 8-9 matchup for them yesterday to get a win over. You know, I'm not going to call West Virginia a rival by any stretch, but there's a lot of overlapping, and that campus in Morgantown is only about 3.5 hours away from College Park, and there have been some football wars over the years between the two programs. And, you know, Maryland's a basketball school. West Virginia is more of a football-first school, although they love their hoops in West Virginia. That was big for the Terps. Big win. For them. All right, the list of things that I did not like from the game. The start that we've talked about, and really, they couldn't protect the basketball. They couldn't protect the ball, and they couldn't rebound. They got their dribble handoffs blown up. They got their double teamed. They got double teamed on their post-ups, turned it over. They had 6 turnovers in the first 10 minutes and 4 points. You know, here's the deal in basketball. If you don't get shots up, you're not going to score. It's impossible to score if you don't shoot. And for a while, Maryland didn't even get shots up because they were turning it over so frequently and so quickly. What carried them during that stretch is they got stops on the other end. But they gave up too many offensive rebounds. In the game, they gave up 16 offensive rebounds. Now, it calmed down a little bit at the end because Juju really took over. But they gave up too many offensive rebounds. That's on the list of things that I didn't like. The free throw shooting, they missed 4 out of their final 7 attempts. If they could have knocked down some free throws, including Jameer Young's last free throw, which gave West Virginia a chance to win the game on a 3-pointer. I'll ask Kevin Willard, too, by the way. Remind me. I'll ask Kevin Willard if Jameer had made that, if they would have fouled in that spot up 3. There wasn't a lot of time left. But I wonder if he would have fouled in that spot. On the list of after free throw shooting, they were 15 of 22 overall and missed 4 out of their last 7 attempts. On the officiating in the game, look, that's a hard game to officiate. I understand that. If you were to blow the whistle on every single violation because there were travels that weren't called, there were carries that weren't called, there were lots of fouls, and 43 of them were called, but there were lots of fouls that weren't called. If you called everything in that game honestly would have lasted 3.5 hours. It already lasted 2.5. And so it's a hard game to officiate. I would imagine just officiating West Virginia games in general tend to be difficult. But on the list of things that I didn't like was a replay review when Maryland had jumped out to a 7-point lead early in the second half before the first TV timeout. And they were reviewing apparently a Dante Scott screen where there was literally not even that much contact, one of the only screens without contact or a lot of it in the game. And it was a 5-minute review. 5 minutes. And it was like, what are you reviewing? Did you just show up to this basketball game? People were throwing each other around in the first half, physically picking people up and tossing them in the first half, and we didn't get a replay. And in the second half, we're going to replay a slip screen? Are you kidding me? 5 minutes, 38-31 Maryland. They come out of that, and all of the steam from not only the game, but Maryland's momentum, I thought anyway, was really in trouble. I was infuriated during that stretch. And sure enough, West Virginia comes out after that 5-minute delay. They're able to regroup. They're on the ropes to start the second half. The Terps have, you know, erased a 13-point first-half deficit, and now they're up 7. They're up 7, and by the way, this was like 2 or 3 minutes into the second half. And at that point, Kedrian Johnson for West Virginia goes drive, score, foul, 3-point play. Okay? Next possession, drive, foul, 3-point play. It's 38-37. He has scored 6 straight points. Next possession, Johnson, 3-pointer, fouled, 4-point play. The dude scored 10 straight points. We're not even at the first under 16 TV timeout. That took the wind, I thought, out of the sails. I'll ask Willard about it. But I thought that that was really a rough moment for the Terps. Nothing was called after 5 minutes, nor should anything have been called. They should have been able to see that in 30 seconds. 5 minute delay. Johnson goes on a 10-0 run. It ends, by the way, with Johnson making a three. So he scored 13 of their 16 points to go from down 38-31 to up 47-38 in 3 minutes. Then Maryland came back. But man, that was a bad, bad review. By the way, so was the review with 47 seconds to go on the Jameer Young turnover. I don't know how they didn't see that that ball didn't touch a West Virginia defender. Maryland got lucky on that. Now, West Virginia didn't get hurt by it. The Terps were up three, and Jameer Young turned it over again. And so you ended up with West Virginia scoring to get it to 66-65 on the next possession anyway. I mean, Maryland was able to burn some timeouts. By the way, that was also that moment where Dante Scott had that missed shot but then got his offensive rebound, which was huge because they were able to burn some clock on that next possession. But that was, you know, that's the list of things overall I didn't like. I'm just going to mention a couple of other things, and I alluded to it earlier. It had to do with the broadcast of the game and Jim Nantz, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill in particular. I'll get to that when we come back. 7 a.m., Kevin Willard jumps on with us in 10 minutes. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980.